Hello and welcome to the Florida CPA Today podcast with Mia Thomas, former chair of the FICPA and current director of learning curriculum development for the FICPA. And now it's time to hear from your host, Mia Thomas.
Thank you for joining us on today's podcast. Today we will talk about transformational leadership for the future. I've learned that a future leader recognizes that innovation and authenticity inspires others. Obviously, the future is continually changing. Experts say that the center of transformational leader is their character, being innovative, improving wisely, and those that inspire authenticity were also important to drive business results. With me today is Michelle Norris, a nationally known speaker and trainer who prepares organizations and their associations for the tsunami of demographic and cultural changes in the workplace. Michelle, thank you for being with us today.
It's a pleasure.
Michelle, why is transformational leadership necessary for the future at work, and why now?
So my company specializes in navigating generations at work. What I have learned over the last 10 years in the work that I do of preparing organizations to retain, attract, and develop leaders in the workforce of tomorrow is that we now need to lead in a different perspective. In order to attract and retain, and especially to develop them, we need to pivot the way we lead.
So Michelle, tell me a little bit about yourself and what your organization does.
So the name of my company is Navigen Leadership, which is a word that my husband actually made up.
Nice.
It's a navigating in generations. And it has the middle initials VI, which is an aunt of mine. Those were her initials, and she actually was very inspirational in inspiring me to do this work. So
nice.
It kind of fit all of the pieces that I needed. And what I started out doing is filling a need that I had as a leader. So I spent 30 years in corporate America as a sales leader. And I worked for very large companies, Xerox, ADP, Boise Cascade, Office Max. And when I started hiring my first millennials around 2003, 2004, Mia, I was an epic failure. I really blew it.
Well, I appreciate that you recognize failures because failures let you improve yourself, right?
Right, right, absolutely. Yeah. Being resilient, I got it. But I complained a lot at first, right? I complained about, wait a minute, what's happening here? Who are these people? Why are they so different? Why is what I'm doing not connecting with them? And all of the above. And so I started to research and to figure out what was missing. I actually thought about calling my company Crack the Code.
I like that one.
Yeah, I wanted to figure out what's missing? What's happening? And as I began to research that and realize what was going to happen in the future, that we were literally in a tsunami, a demographic tsunami. It was changing everything about the way we're going to work. Then I started to develop a direction, moving towards that direction, and became an entrepreneur. Nice. And I became an entrepreneur. I left corporate America on September 30th, 2008, day of the crash.
Oh, wow.
It was perfect timing. Off to a flying start. Trying to retain workers when we were suddenly imploding our economy.
And look at where you are now. That's awesome. Michelle, I'm thinking a transformational leader takes an ordinary environment that encourages staff and management to achieve extraordinary results. What do you see is happening in the workplace, and what is driving this change?
What is driving this change is essentially the workforce is demanding it. The workforce wants different things. And it's not necessarily a generational thing, Mia. Everybody wants what this large generation of millennials is basically infusing into our workforce. Everybody wants what they want. But with them being 82 million people, they are really at the point where they are now demanding it. And so those transformations that need to take place from a leadership perspective are really to be able to retain talent.
Well, and I think when we look at a chart of what age groups are now in the workplace, mm-hmm. we're seeing that the millennials are pushing into the bigger pie of the people that are within an organization, right?
Yes, yes. In 2050, millennials became the largest percentage of the workforce. And so they're currently around 51% of the workforce. By 2025, they'll be 75% of the workforce.
Wow.
And that, yeah. That's great, and that's all true, but the part that's transformational about it and the urgency of my work when I started was that that all happened very quickly in about 15 years. Mm-hmm. That we literally switched from boomers being the largest percentage to millennials becoming the largest percentage. And what was critical about that is that the generation in between, Generation X, is proportionately smaller. It's about half the size of the millennials. And so I knew what was going to happen was that with 10,000 boomers turning 65 every day, that we didn't have enough Gen Xers to fill that 78 million yeah. population of yeah. boomer leaders. And that I knew that we had to have millennial leaders quickly. Everybody used to complain about them wanting to be leaders right away. But the reality is we need them to be leaders right out of the gate because our organizations have not properly prepared for that succession.
And I love how you said that we need to empower them earlier than when the older generations kind of had to pay their dues
yes.
and all that. So, you know, we now have five generations in the workplace. We have the traditionalists, the boomers, the Gen Xers, the Gen Ys, those are the millennials, and coming on board is the Gen Zs. And the most we've ever had in the workplace, right? Those five generations are all there. So, Michelle, what are the challenges that organizations are facing in managing and leading those five generations in the workforce? And if you could share with us some of those strengths and why we need each other.
We absolutely need each other. And to me, you know, on the Strengths Finder, my two top strengths are individualization and connectedness. And so they kind of work towards this entire work that and perspective that I have about generations is that we all bring unique talents. All we need to do is be able to communicate with each other in a manner that we all feel seen, heard, understood, and valued. And so when we get that opportunity to understand the other person's lens and what they bring to the table, then all of this stuff disappears. Nothing grates me more than when I hear stereotypes. All over our culture, everywhere right now, millennial is a bad word. It's, you know, lazy, narcissistic, entitled, poor work ethic. You know, and it's blasted. When I first started my work, I used to talk about the fact that Gen X was maligned. And I never dreamed that we would get to this point where we have this negativity about stereotypes about our generations. I see none of those things as being true about any of the generations. I only see what they're bringing that's different, nuanced, and that diversity is what we need.
I like what you taught us about there are those buts, right?
Yes, so. Yes. So about 2015, right, as they became the largest, I also saw another generation coming in, and that was the millennial butt generation. Mm-hmm. And then they would say, you know, I'd ask that the millennials to raise their hand, and they'd say, well, I'm a millennial butt. And it's perfectly understandable. Yeah. Nobody wants to identify as a millennial because there's nothing positive out there about millennials, and it is not true. Mm-hmm. And so when we paint those negative stereotypes and we look at things from that lens, then who wants to be that?
Right.
Right? So, yes.
So true. Ernest Hemingway said the best way to find out if you can trust somebody is to trust them. Now that sounds pretty simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Michelle, there is a trust equation that you teach when working on building a high-performing team with leaders. As CPAs, we believe in trustworthiness and ethics in our profession. Can you tell us about the trust equation and how we think about leading?
Sure. Sure, but I will preface it, though, first, Mia. So my trust equation was designed to help what I call seasoned leaders be able to understand how to nuance the transition from their previous leadership style to a transformational leadership style. My trust equation does not encompass trust as a whole, because I actually study trust. I'm working on a certification in conversational intelligence from Judith E. Glaser, which has a very, but the neuroscience of trust. So it's deeper diving and digging into trust. I'm also going to be working as on a certification with Brené Brown on Dare to Lead, her Dare to Lead program. And she has another deeper dive into trust and integrity and all of those things. So by no means is my trust equation working anything but with their work and their research. My trust equation is about how do I help transform to relate to a better leader for this new workforce. And so it works like this. It's C plus A plus T plus V plus R. You got it so far, Mia? And then it's over T, okay? So it works like this. C is collaboration, or as Judith Glaser calls it, co-creation. That is a leadership style that's different from control and command or consensus. It's a leadership style that creates a different way to work together. And it isn't showing up with the answers as a leader and then disseminating the information, but actually working with the team from the bottom up to create a different reality. And there are a bunch of pieces to collaboration. I don't imagine we want to go too deep into them right now, but it's collaboration style of leadership is what we all really want, but millennials are demanding it. So there's collaboration. The second piece is authenticity. So the A is stands for authenticity, and it means who are you really? The way I say it is, who are you on Saturday morning? Mm-hmm. Who of you on Saturday? Is it the same who that shows up on Monday? Or are you actually playing the role of the leader? Because I know that's what I did.
Right.
I literally did that in my job. I was playing the role of the leader and couldn't authentically be myself because I was raised in a manner that you have to park yourself at the door. You know, when I came up, you know, in the 80s, you know, that's how you led. You park your stuff at the door. You don't show up with any preconceived notions of yourself. You become the leader. So I was playing the role. So that's authenticity. T is transparency. And that is, can we speak in truths? Can we be transparent about what is true? Now, we can't always be transparent, right? We can't, as a leader, there are things we can't be necessarily transparent about. So the hack for that is be transparent about what you can't be transparent about. That's perfectly acceptable.
Which is the truth.
It's the truth. Yes, there are some things going on. No need for alarm at this point. I can't tell you all the details now. As soon as I can, you'll be the first to know.
And would you compare that to sometimes middle management might have some problems with transparency? I know that you've talked in the past about the hourglass.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about the hourglass.
So I know for me, being a leader in the middle of an organization, it was like an hourglass. And I was that real center part where the sand balls, you know, the very little tiny part of the glass. And information was coming to me from the top, and I was disseminating it to the bottom. And then information was coming to me from the bottom, and I was disseminating it into the top. And most of the time, I was squeezed really tight in the middle.
Sounds pretty stressful.
Oh, yes, it can be very stressful. And so you have to literally maneuver that as a middle leader, right? You have to maneuver that. You have to control your stress. You have to control all of these things. And so that's where we see a lot of this showing up is that, well, you know, they tell me I can't talk about this. It's a conflict for me. I know it was for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually, at the end of my career, laid off 75% of my workforce.
Wow.
Yeah. It was horrible. So it was a situation where I just felt tight. And being transparent was not always easy. This generation, these other generations coming behind them, they're demanding it. It's the word. I mean, if you hear, just turn the news on. Everybody wants transparency.
Definitely.
And the next one is vulnerability. All I can tell you is Google vulnerability Brené Brown and look at her TED Talk. It's the probably the fourth most popular TED Talk ever, and you'll learn about that. It's a very long subject. We could spend a whole podcast talking about that one.
Well, I love what you said about vulnerability. It was about being courageous.
It is.
And that's a super strength that a lot of people don't have. But if you can recognize that, you can have a positive vulnerability.
Correct. So yeah. For me, I'll tell you my perspective on it. Vulnerability, I was always taught that you would be weak if you were vulnerable. I was always taught fake it till you make it. You know, all of those things of you have to play that role. And you certainly are the leader, so you're expected to know. And you just can't know everything anymore. It's impossible to know everything anymore as a leader. Mm-hmm. And being able to admit, A, that I don't know something, or B, that I've made a mistake, was very difficult for me. Early in my career, it was a block. And so having the courage to be able to admit those things within boundaries in a safe place is actually courage, not weakness. And so it's very important for the distinction, because I go a lot of places and a lot of organizations, and when I ask for that definition, I'm still getting it's weak and you're not allowed to be vulnerable. So that's the V, and the R is respect. Mutual respect is absolutely critical from a leader right now. It is no longer a top-down world. It's an equalized world, and you are a coach and you are a mentor to those people, and they want that relationship, that you can respect them just as much as they respect you. It's not positional respect anymore. It's not positional power, that just because you're the boss that you're going to dictate to people. And the T for the over T is time. Don't show up tomorrow with these traits and think you're gonna get there immediately. Those are things that you have to work on.
That's wonderful, Michelle. Thank you so much for that. You are so on point on this trust equation, and I can't wait for other people to learn and roll that out. Research has found that the 4-quadrant model of emotional intelligence is the single most reason for leadership success. As we become more aware of our self-awareness, other people's awareness, self-management, and relationship management, we can improve with others how we lead and interact with them. What do we see in a leader? Like, if we could think of that one person that kind of helped us through the way and seeing who that leader was. And then when we ourselves think about how are we as a leader, are we falling into those same positions? Because tell us a little bit about the 3 quadrants.
Sure.
And where people are falling into, and what types of people are we hiring?
Certainly. So I do this exercise that I actually got from somebody who teaches social emotional intelligence. And it is to jot down 5 attributes of your ideal leader, whoever was inspiring to you. And when you jot those down, you know, you're just thinking from the perspective of how they impacted you. And so that gives an aspirational perspective of leadership for the folks as we start the conversation. And then at the end, after we go through the whole social-emotional intelligence piece, and by the way, Mia, when I ask about social-emotional intelligence, which really, by all forecasts, by all of the pundits at this point in my work, of what's coming as the superpower in the next 10 years, this is the superpower. Social-emotional intelligence is absolutely the superpower that we're going to have in the AI world, right?
Right, because we don't necessarily have to have that intelligence because AI is doing that
Correct.
For us.
And our contributions to what we're going to be able to do as human beings is in this area. We're going to still work with humans. We have to be able to have relationships with humans. We have to have connection with humans. So this is the superpower that we need in order to be able to do that leading and to differentiate ourselves, quite frankly, in that AI market. And so the exercise says, okay, so that's your ideal leader. They jot those down. Then we go through the social emotional intelligence. And then at the end, I've got three buckets up on the wall, three signposts. One is, okay, so maybe you wrote down the person was really smart, or they had knowledge, or they taught you something, right? That would go under IQ, right? So right. Put that under IQ. And then maybe the person taught you some skills. Maybe they taught you how to code or how to, how to do something technical in your workplace. Mm-hmm. Maybe they helped you in the CPA exam, something of that nature. That would go under technical skills. So put that over to, under that bucket. And then the middle is this social emotional intelligence. All the things we just talked about, that you were influential to others, or you understood others, or you managed your own emotions, or you understand yourself, and that self-awareness helps you lead. That put things, put the rest of those in that bucket. Well, every single time, there's one or two on the two ends. Right. one or two in skills and one or two in IQ, and everything else is in the middle. So social emotional intelligence is the number one indicator of leadership success, and the lack thereof in my coaching work, those that need help in leadership are those that lack social emotional intelligence. It's the superpower. And the amazing part about that is that when you get done with the exercise and you look up at the wall, and then I ask the question that says, and how do we hire?
Right. We hire those super smart, highly technical people that we want in our organizations.
Right.
But then what do? We elevate them through time within an organization. So they go into management. They're super smart, but do they have that emotional part? So I compared it to the pillars, right? You've got these really strong strengths of technically smart, highly intelligent, great strengths that we would want in our CPA profession.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have that gushiness in the middle,
mm-hmm,
to that we, as a staff person or whatever, look up to a leader?
Correct.
Right? We need that superpower. We need to feed ourselves with the superpower, just like how we feed ourselves with superfood. We need to feed ourselves with this emotional quotient.
And it is not something you either have or you don't have. It is literally learned skills.
Right.
There's an educational process that has to happen for people to awaken that part of their brain from a neuroscience perspective and turn it on. And it can happen, but there is an application that has to happen for it to happen.
And a lot of those people that may not have that emotional part don't think they need it. So
correct.
There is a process of awakening that, as you said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other thing that you said is we promote people because they're good at their job, right? So we take people that are really good at their job and then we make them the manager or the department head or whatever.
Right.
And that literally is a hat change.
But they don't change the hat.
They don't ever change the hat. So they're micromanaging those people because they were a superstar at it. Right? They were really good at it, and nobody will ever measure up to them, right? So they have to get into everybody's business because they already did that job, and they never put the leader hat on that changes their own perspective of how to get work done. And so we kind of repeat that cycle over and over again, mm-hmm, within our organizations, when in fact, for transformational leadership to occur, we have to change that paradigm. We have to change that paradigm that leadership is another profession.
Wow, that is so spot on.
Right?
Yeah. So Michelle, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your insights on transformational leadership for the future. We are living in exciting times, and it is great for our listeners to be reminded of self-awareness and reframing how they see others. If you'd like to have Michelle at your office, visit us at www.ficpa.org and go to our customized on-site training tab. Her resume bio is on there, and she would love to come in and facilitate your organization, share corporate culture, and be a strategic leader to help you develop into a strategic leader. We appreciate you so much, Michelle.
Thank you, Mia. It's a pleasure.
The FICPA has online courses. We have an in-person CFO series. We have seminars, conferences, and resources on how you can transform you and your organization for the future. Call us at 1-850-224-2727 to learn more. And until next time, keep smiling.
Continue the conversation with the Florida Institute of Certified Public Accountants. Become a member and follow us on social media for today's trends and hot topics.